Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 266, featuring Juan Gomez, who is the leading technical account manager at Epic Games, or a leading technical account manager at Epic Games. Really cool guy. I have actually known Juan for a very long time at Digital Domain. His main focus at Epic is about virtual production. Kristen, this was a kind of a techie podcast, techie episodes, but Juan's a really cool guy, isn't he?
It was awesome listening to him and kind of all your past experiences at DD together and making the leap. I said from mental ray to V-Ray is kind of where he started.
That's when he and I were working together. That was on Tron, actually. Yeah.
And so now that he does virtual production at Epic Games, it was cool hearing about that and how it's, you know, editing and updating
on the fly,
makes it quicker. Yep. And then it also helps like with shooting, so makes it faster and less complicated for everyone on set. Mm-hmm. And then it was also cool to hear that VFX artists are getting on the field more and not just like on their workstations.
Right. Well, with virtual production, you're basically doing visual effects live in real time. Mm-hmm. So you're actually in the environment a lot more. So VFX artists are participating more sort of quote unquote on set, but it's actually a virtual set. Right?
Yeah.
So it was really cool to hear, you know, all of the stuff going on over at Epic. And it's, you know, it's great. They've got classes if people want to learn that stuff. We should also note that we have V-Ray for Unreal, which is a big thing that we're doing. And we talk about how V-Ray for Unreal can benefit people in that area as well because of the ray tracing and the reflect and the GI tools that obviously come with V-Ray. So pretty interesting stuff to talk about all around. We don't have much going on in events, right? We have a couple things we want to talk about. Oh, speaking of real time, chaosgroup.com/Lavina. You should go there to check out our beta of Lavina. It is currently in beta. If you want to try it out, if those of you guys want to know more about what Lavina is, just go there, chaosgroup.com/Lavina. Lavina is L-A-V-I-N-A, just in case you're wondering how to spell that. You know what it stands for? Oh. You don't? It's Bulgarian for avalanche.
Oh, I did.
You did know. Yeah, yes. Lavina is Bulgarian for avalanche, in case you're wondering why we came up for that name with that name. It's a pretty cool name. Okay, great. Kristen, where can people find out about the podcast?
So you can go to facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast.
Yep, or chaosgroup.com/CG Garage, which is our webpage. And if people want to email us and have their ideas, where can they email us?
Labs@chaosgroup.com.
All right. Thank you so much. With that being said, please enjoy this great podcast with Juan Gomez of Epic Games.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're going to fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
You like it?
Yeah,
it's good. Yeah, it didn't. It was much more rinky-dinky, and then we start to get better, and then it was like, let's make this into a new furniture and everything. So it's like looking
legit.
Cool. Legit, man. Legit.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, dude, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for inviting me,
buddy. Yeah, man, it's been good. It's been really good to reconnect with you and see some of the cool stuff you're doing. But so what I always find interesting is that even though there's people that I've had on who I've known for a long time who have done, you know, I've always found out that after I talked to them on the podcast, I found out all kinds of crazy things about them that I didn't know, even though I've been working with them for years. So let's start with some of your origin story. How did this all start for you? How did you start getting into CG and doing all the stuff you're doing, man?
Yeah, I have a cool story.
Yeah.
When I was in high school.
Yeah.
You know, I always was watching, you know, I was in Colombia, mm-hmm. always watched behind the scene, you know, the making of.
Yeah.
And I always watched that as like, oh, this is awesome. But I never thought it was going to be possible for me. Mm-hmm. You know, in Colombia, we never had a big movie industry.
Right.
Special effects, definitely not.
Right.
But I was always intrigued about, you know, I play a lot with fireworks. I was crazy with fireworks. They used to sell this sheet of paper with little explosives,
uh-huh.
and then I will buy lots of them and then wrap them into a ball,
uh-huh.
and then when I hit it hard with a piece of wood, and then it will make this big explosion and it will splatter everywhere. But then I start taking chemistry class.
Uh-huh.
And my first class, I heard, okay, these elements here on the left are highly reactive.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, highly reactive? What do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can explode. They can explode even with water. I was like, really? Which one? So he's like, this one. Okay, potassium. Okay, got it. So then I call this place, this random place in Colombia, in like a lab. And I was like, hey, I need to buy potassium. Mm-hmm. And they were like, what do you need it for? I'm like, no, you know, science project at school.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, fine, what kind of potassium? I'm like, whatever, it's potassium. Give me some potassium. Like, so they gave me this potassium that suddenly you put in water and then it tints the water really nice. So uh-huh. you have these really intricate shapes of like ink just moving.
Uh-huh.
Really cool for actually shooting.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, this doesn't work for me. I want explosion. So I called them back next day and I was like, no, I need something that explodes with water. And they were like, no, what are you doing? It's really dangerous. I'm like, no, don't worry. My teacher allowed me to buy it. And they were like, okay, fine. So then I got this metallic potassium.
Uh-huh.
So then I got in this tin jar, like really, it looks scary.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, fine. And the people told me, be careful, you know, be careful playing with this because even with oxygen, it can explode.
Right.
I was like, okay, no problem. So I was really afraid. I opened it with my friends. I were with these really long pieces of sticks trying to take it out of this liquid. It came in this oil.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like really afraid that it was going to about to explode. So then we took it out and nothing happened. We're like, okay, what's going on? And then with a hose, we just put some water in it. And then suddenly, big explosion. We're like, oh, this is awesome. So then we just start experimenting with it. And then we realized this, the harder you hit it with water, the louder the explosion. So then we were start getting really confident. And now we were grabbing it with our fingers and throwing to the pool. So obviously, you know, it was a lot of fun. So then I'm like, okay, I want to do effects. And I moved to the United States. I started doing electrical engineer.
Uh-huh.
Because I didn't know what to do.
Yeah. Where did you go?
I first went to San Diego State.
Oh, okay.
Like a little kind of starting, and then went to a college. And
mm-hmm.
I just wanted to create stuff. I knew I wanted to be, I just wanted to create. So I thought maybe engineer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe creating lasers. But then when I was doing engineer, I started discovering computer animation.
Okay.
And then I took like a lightweight class and I was, oh yeah, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
And then so I decided to switch majors. I met this guy, Colombian guy, who used to own a company, used to be called Angel Studios.
Okay.
It was a video game company in San Diego mm-hmm. that later on got acquired by Rockstar.
Oh, right. Okay.
So Rockstar Engine was actually Unreal. Angel Studios engine. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he introduced me to a lot of people. I was like, I want to study this. And a lot of people start telling me, okay, go to Academy of Art.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up deciding to switch majors and I've been enjoying it a lot since then.
Right. So that's what got you in, right?
That's what got me in, you know, the behind the scene, just thinking about
looking at cool stuff. Yeah.
And just experimenting with fireworks.
All right. So, where was your first break? Where did you get your first break into stuff?
So I was extremely passionate at school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was doing all these super cool projects. I even won like they had the spring show, you know, mm-hmm. at school. So when I was right before I graduated, the ESC mm-hmm. Escape, it was a company that was making the Matrix at that time.
Yeah.
You know, came to us.
In the Bay Area.
In the Bay Area,
yeah.
Alameda.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to the school and they asked the school, okay, give us a big edit of everybody's demo reel and it cannot be longer than 30 seconds or 15 seconds.
Okay.
So, okay, I was like, perfect. You know, I got my chance. I got my shot. So, it went well. I actually got an offer, an internship
mm-hmm.
to work on the last Matrix.
At ESC.
At ESC, right. Yeah. Thanks to also a good friend of mine, Andres Martinez.
Oh, yeah, Andres.
Yeah. He was a supervisor over there at the time, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, I was joking every time with my friends at school. I'm like, oh, the Wachowski brothers are waiting for me to graduate it so I can help them on the last Matrix. And there you go, the universe.
Yeah. So I guess you knew Litt and Parker and those guys. Yes. That's where you met. Yeah.
Yeah. I work with Jonathan Litt. A lot of people that I actually still work with.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I know them from Escape.
Right. Okay. So you were at Escape for a while.
I was there for a couple of movies. Mm-hmm. And then the company shut down.
Yep.
And then be in the Bay Area, there's not that many places that make visual effects. So I started looking for places and I ended up coming here to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I started working for a small place, kind of like a startup place for movies, like TV channels, like Sci-Fi, AT&T, and all this stuff. And then I end up, that company closed again. Mm-hmm. And then I end up working at Digital Domain.
Right. So what was your first project at DD?
It was actually using V-Ray.
Yeah?
Yeah, because it was a commercial.
Okay.
It was a car commercial. They just finished the Nine Inch Nails.
The Nine Inch Nails thing,
They just finished that one. So it was really well received, V-Ray in a Digital Domain. So they were looking for more art, for more 3D, 3D Max V-Ray artists. Mm-hmm. So I was one of them. And then I started doing a lot of commercials using V-Ray, 3D Max V-Ray. And eventually we started working in the Gears of War commercial.
Right, with Joe.
With Joseph Kosinski.
Right.
Using the first time Unreal Engine.
Oh, it's right.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that was done all in Engine.
That was, that's what Epic said. Like, okay, Digital Domain, you guys are really good at doing cinematic work.
Right.
We want to make a commercial for Gears of War that is cinematic, and we're going to hire a director, all that stuff. And they gave us just the PCs with the entire Gears of War
assets.
And none of us knew Unreal Engine at the time.
Right.
No documentation. And we were like, okay, let's try it. And I was extremely happy because it was literally like playing with like Legos, like modules. Mm-hmm. You have the particle system, you have this, and amazing work. You know, everything was looking really good. And we were like pushing it. Mm-hmm. And it was a hit. You know, that commercial was, it was the Mad World commercial.
Yeah. I remember that commercial. That was a pretty big deal because he had done, I guess, he'd done a Halo commercial before that, right?
Yes. No, actually, the Halo was, I think it was after.
After that. So maybe he did another Gears of War.
He did, yeah, we did a couple with him.
Right.
And this first Gears of War commercial was supposed to be directed by David Fincher.
I remember now, yes, that's right.
And David Fincher's like, you know what, I'm too busy doing movies or whatever.
Right.
He's like, I have this new guy.
Yeah.
That I think, you know, he's going to work for you guys.
Yeah.
And that was
Joe's job. So did you work, because I know you worked on Tron. Did you work on the teaser?
No, I didn't work on the teaser.
Okay.
I worked on the movie. That's when
that's when you and I first met. It was on the Tron thing.
Yeah.
Which was a big show.
It was a big show. It was a good,
really fun. Good show. Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Lots of learning that we did on that show.
Yes. At that time we just finished, I think it was Benjamin Buttons, or we just finished for
you
sure.
Finished Buttons, right? You worked on Buttons, right?
I worked on Buttons.
Right.
But we, before that, we worked on Speed Racer.
Oh, right.
So we were in this
with Kimberberry.
Uh-huh. Right. And we were in this mental ray world at Digital Domain. We were really, you know, because Buttons, Speed Racer, and then we needed to do Tron.
Right.
And it was a challenge to do Tron in Mental Ray.
The challenge mainly was about motion blur.
It was about motion blur. Right. It was about like refractions.
Right.
Definitely motion blur was the challenge.
Motion blur was a problem.
It was extremely slow to do correct motion blur in Mental Ray.
Right.
And we had to do a whole bunch of hacks in the Speed Racer just to get decent render times.
Right.
And, you know, I used to use Mental Ray long time ago, you know, at the Matrix. Mm-hmm. But, and I remember we got tasked just to, let's try V-Ray, because V-Ray at the time, it was start to be integrated in Maya.
Right, yep.
And I remember sending an email to Blado. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, Blado, we have this really high pr- profile project, mm-hmm. and I think you were not yet in the project. And we're like, yeah. we want to try this. And then suddenly we start doing some tests, and quickly we're able just to get really, really good results.
Right.
And that's when we decided, okay, I think it's time for us to switch to V-Ray.
Yep.
And then we brought
that's
you
when,
in.
That's when Eric got me in to do it as well, which was, it was fun. It was a big transition. It's very, because it kind of happened in the middle of the show where we decided to switch render engines.
Yes.
Which was really risky.
Extremely risky.
Really risky. So they did everything. Everything was in Mental Rain, and slowly we switched one by one by one, a whole sequences into V-Ray. The only thing that stayed in Mental Ray was the head.
Yes.
Because that was far enough established that they didn't want to mess with it, and it's complicated to do heads. So
yeah.
So that was the only one.
Yeah, I think we started doing heads in V-Ray. Maybe actually the Tupac. I think the Tupac was, Tupac was V-Ray.
Tupac was V-Ray. A girl with a dragon tattoo.
The girl with the dragon tattoo. That's the first
one. That's the first one.
Yes.
Yeah.
We were both in that same show.
Yeah. I liked that show.
Yeah.
It was not that, wasn't that complicated, but we were really, really good about it. And I remember actually working on it with you where we were working on some of those, the bike sequences where you, if you watched a movie, you wouldn't realize that those were some of those were all CG because they cut perfectly with live action.
Yeah.
It was amazing work.
Yeah. It was fun. It was especially after Tron.
Yeah.
We were so
burned out. yeah. So it was a little bit more like, hey, let's just do something. And it wasn't, it was a very different look than Tron.
Yes.
It was much more gritty and dirty, and Tron was all perfect and clean and everything. Yeah. So it was kind of fun to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you work on Tupac?
I was in the same room.
Okay.
I did help a couple of little things here and there.
Yeah, because I know you and I worked on that Halo spot.
Yeah.
That was cool. That was really cool. That was really hard because I basically was given the task of having one very, very, very small team. We only had like six of us that did the whole thing. Yes.
And really short time.
Really short time. So the hours were insane to get that done. But it was Joe, and Joe was nice, so kind of made it work.
Came out good. Yeah. I like it. I like how we did that whole 2.5D approach.
Yeah,
a lot of like reprojecting the diffuse maps and the spec maps.
Yeah,
and
instead of just texturing everything, let's just project it, right?
Worked. It worked.
It did work pretty well. Well, that was cool. And then I know you worked on Maleficent. That was another big show for you. You worked on those fairies for a long time, right?
Yeah, I did work. I did work for not a long time, but I did work at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we were like pushing it, the digital humans in V-Ray.
Yeah.
And I remember it was like, wow, I was really impressed
mm-hmm.
of the quality that we were getting out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of work on that one, but mm-hmm. It was really cool. All right. So you after that, you left DDE at some point and you went to Method. Is that right?
That's correct.
And did you work in visual effects at Method, or how did you get in? Because I know you ended up doing VR work there. So how did that whole transition happen?
So I started working at Method, CG supervising movies,
mm-hmm.
and then I was, trying to find it would be right trying to find mm-hmm. ways to speed up look dev and lighting,
mm-hmm.
And that's when you guys started doing this. V-Ray RT, and they were doing with the VC racks and the GPU. So I was like, okay, that's the future. That's what we need to do. So I got a hold of a really nice NVIDIA GPU card, and I started testing. I wanted to test, okay, is this ready for real-time, real-time look dev?
Right.
And we were working on Ant-Man, and we started testing.
Oh, Ant-Man, yeah.
And it was really early stages of V-Ray RT. There is some stuff were not supported at that time.
Yep.
Subsurface that probably was not supported. There was like some components.
Yep.
And I remember, working with Chaos Group, giving them, kind of feedback. Hey, this is not working. The simple things like simple operation systems, like, I don't know, maybe RAMs or multipliers, they were not working at the time. So we didn't push it as far, but they saw me. Mm-hmm. As a person who's like really interested in real time.
Right.
And at that time, Method was created this real-time previous department.
Okay.
And they were using CryEngine.
Oh, okay.
And they did like a couple of shows using this. And then Peter Shipkob was the leading this team.
Yeah.
And he's like, Juan, you know, you're really interested in real time. Come over and join our new group. We're going to do this VR startup within Method Studios. And then That's when we decided they created this thing that was called Deluxe VR.
Right.
And
so it was like an offshoot of Method, in a sense,
yes,
right? And a small team?
Small, really small team.
Okay. What kind of content were you guys making?
We're doing a lot of we wanted to do VR. And at that time, we did a couple of test projects, like short. We did a short film in VR. We did a small game in VR. Mm-hmm. And we did jet presentation, like a fighting jet.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was an F-17 or something.
Okay.
So we start first understanding and learning the technology, the medium, and how we can actually sell something, you know, how we can actually make money using VR.
Mm-hmm.
So we discovered that the enterprise industry was the only one who had the budget and were willing to pay just for VR experiences.
Yes.
So then we start working with General Electronics, GE,
mm-hmm.
and then we start working with Time Magazine, doing all these kind of different VR.
Sure.
And then we started working in Justice League VR.
Right.
Minigame, and then we work on Robin Hood VR minigame. So a lot of different
smaller experiences. Yeah.
And this is when, once again, I got back into Unreal Engine.
Okay.
You know.
So you guys moved away from CryEngine at this point.
Yeah,
right?
We moved away from CryEngine. CryEngine was much more complicated to do VR, and we were using Unity and Unreal Engine.
Okay.
But I've been a big fan of Unreal Engine since early 2005 or something.
Okay.
With the Gears of War. So then I was really happy again just to start jumping into Unreal Engine, and it was a much better game engine right now.
Sure. Sure, sure, sure. Okay. But eventually this led you to working for Unreal itself, right?
Yeah.
So how did that happen?
So I was working on, when we were working at Deluxe VR, that actually changed the name to Method EXP.
Okay.
Just to bring it back under the Method umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing this really big project for Apple in AR.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew it was extremely challenging. You know, this is a project that Apple was pushing the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
And we were doing a test between Unity and Unreal Engine. And then Epic kind of find out, Kim Liveri heard.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you guys have to use Unreal Engine. Whatever you guys are doing, whatever you guys want to do, you can only do it in Unreal Engine, and we will support you.
Okay.
So suddenly they send people to work with us. For 2 weeks, developers, we had amazing support.
Right.
So when I saw that, I was like, wow, this is an amazing company.
Right.
Just to
turn it full circle, this is Kim Liveri, who was the VFX supervisor on Speed Racer, so you'd already worked with him.
Yes.
But he's now the CTO of Epic, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
It's a small industry, a small world. So a lot of people end up, and a lot of people from The Matrix.
Right.
And Kim Liveri was the visual effects supervisor of The Matrix.
Yeah.
He's now the CTO of Epic Games, and there is a lot of people
still
from the Matrix times, they work at Epic.
Right, yeah.
So it's cool. It goes full circle, and I really like the product, Unreal Engine, and the support is amazing, the culture. So I was like, okay, I definitely want to be part of this company.
Okay.
And I found out that they're going to open an office in LA.
Yeah.
So
that's how you got into it. Nice. Yeah. Now the office that's in LA, because I went to visit you guys. I know you guys are in a WeWork, which is really cool. But you guys are going to open up your own space because you've grown enough here, right?
Yes.
The main area that you guys are focusing, or one of the main areas that you guys are focusing in the LA office, is virtual production. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. So this is a new buzzword. Everyone's talking about virtual production, virtual production this, virtual production that. But unfortunately, you and I had a great conversation about understanding what virtual production is. And I think we need to clarify that a little bit and sort of define that, because sometimes people are very loosely using the term virtual production And the same, I make the joke that it's like, people are saying it's virtual production, like me saying my cruise control is autonomous driving, right? Right? There are different levels, yes, of cars driving it themselves, and cruise control is just step one, right? So virtual production, like how would you define what virtual production is? Like, and then let's go through the different levels from there.
Yeah. So yeah, there is multiple things that are considered virtual production, but I define the virtual production as a set of tools that, yeah, allows you just to visualize, mm-hmm, and virtually do a production, as the term is.
Right.
But it can be from something simple as using an iPad or an iPhone, using ARKit or kind of like computer vision technology, mm-hmm, that allows you to replicate virtually a camera. Mm-hmm. And then you can suddenly have a virtual camera in your hands with an iPhone or a mobile device.
Right.
And then it can go as far as some people are, you know, like virtual production is using simulcams, which is being able to create have a camera, mm-hmm, a physical camera that is being tracked real time, and it creates a representation of that camera in the virtual world. Mm-hmm. And then you can overlay a CG component on top of the plate or behind the plate,
okay,
which is more like an AR, augmented reality experience.
Sure.
And so that's kind of like what I consider part of the virtual production. And there is a lot of tools and hardware that are part of this technology. You know,
right,
you have motion capture system that, you know, XN suits, inertia-based systems that allows you just to capture performance, mm-hmm, and virtually apply that performance into a character.
Right.
And now with the new thing that we've been working on lately, the in-camera VFX, some people are also considering that as virtual production, but we are defining that as an in-camera VFX.
Okay,
just to make
and
clear
that is something where you have a big LED wall or something, or a projection of what's going on, and then the actors are performing there,
correct,
right? And then the camera tracks that motion and gives you the correct parallax that's going on.
Correct. So this has a lot of the components of virtual production, and some people just might consider this as a virtual,
right,
production, because it has the camera that is being used to photograph the talent, mm-hmm, or the set is being tracked real time, so they can actually replicate that camera in Unreal Engine, mm-hmm, and then the Unreal Engine will feed the image on the LED wall that matches exactly the perspective from the camera.
Right.
So it's a way to do a virtual extension of the set.
Right.
And then you get the accurate lighting contribution into the subject, mm-hmm, or, you know, the actors, and you get the reflections, the accurate reflections,
yes,
from the environment, because, you know, there is sets that you actually can have a 270 degrees of coverage. It's almost like you are inside of a cylinder, mm-hmm, or a cube
or
something,
right,
surrounded by LED walls,
right,
that they emit much more light than a projector.
Yes.
And then you have the true perspective changing real time based on the camera position.
So the first time that people really kind of might have seen something like this is during when they did Gravity, right? When,
yes,
they did Gravity was, that's how they got all the lighting on their faces to match and all of those crazy camera moves,
yes,
that were going on, which was really great. But it sounds to me like this all starts with tracking. You have to track something in real time,
yes,
right? So the tracking, you know, tracking stuff is not new to the industry. It's been around for a long time. Obviously, motion capture has been around for a long time, and live tracking has been doing that in that world. And obviously, there's been programs like Motion Builder, et cetera, et cetera. But the what's been interesting to me in the real time in the you know, tracking world, or which ends up becoming virtual production now, is that companies like Unreal have suddenly started to play a role in this area in a very interesting way, because the power of that program is that it can do a lot of things in real time, right? And so suddenly Unreal, which was designed to help you make video games,
correct,
is being used to do other things that are also real time, right?
Yes.
So virtual production is really, it's like building a video game of your set and then saying action. Yes. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's a way of bringing this virtual world into
right.
to the set.
Yeah.
And Unreal Engine does an amazing job just creating beautiful pictures, beautiful images.
Sure.
You know, the rendering is amazing.
As in real time.
As real time. Yes. You can have, you know, a scene that can run 90 frames per second,
yep.
120 frames per second, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And they still looks still really, really good. Mm-hmm. You know, we have examples of amazing looking projects at 30 frames per second, 60 frames per second mm-hmm. with digital humans, with ray tracing. Mm-hmm. I mean, the technology is advancing so fast
sure.
that the quality is really close to offline rendering.
Right. What is interesting to me is not necessarily that it's close to offline rendering, which it's getting there for sure. It's more about what I find it fascinating about the virtual production area is that because it is basically real time, that what you're seeing is very, very close to final, if not sometimes you can even, you know, at some point it will become final, but it's so close to final that there's less guessing about what you're going to get, right? Exactly. And so you can iterate faster because it's real time, right? Yes. And so the thing that I think is fascinating about virtual production is that, you know, when you and I were doing visual effects and Joe, for example, would come by for Tron and he's like, okay, this is what I want. And he's like, all right, well, then come back in a couple of weeks and we'll show you a shot, right? Because yeah. that's the process that we had to go through to do that. But now there's a situation where you're very close to the director is now on a virtual set and directing what he wants or she wants and says, you know, nope, move this, that, there. And the decision making is being done in real time. The decision making in real time is what's very interesting to me, yes. Because I think if you do that, you know, you and I are very good lighters. We love to light in CG and in V-Ray, et cetera. But we're not technically the DPs of the movie, but we're trying to say, I guess the DP wants this, right? But what if the DP says, no, this is exactly what I want, and makes that decision live on set? It's a different game, right?
Yeah, yeah. You bring a good point. Unreal Engine right now is not about making beautiful, like you said, beautiful picture in real time. It's about helping people making the decisions on the fly, real
right.
time.
Yeah.
So it's really cool because this technology is now bringing everybody together on set.
Yes.
Like now you have the lighters, the animators, you know, a lot of people on set working with the director because we can, with the LED wall technology in camera yeah. VFX, they can see in camera what they're going to get.
Right.
So... And we create tools that with an iPad mm-hmm. and a simple interface, then we can give the DP the tools that he needs in order to light virtually the set. So suddenly they are like, okay, I see, I want to get a sunset. I can go really hard on my key light, my practical key light, mm-hmm. because I can see that the environment is actually meeting that kind of rich hue. And you basically see what the CG is supposed to be
right.
doing to the plate, to the real talent. And then you can go in, okay, I'm not afraid anymore to guess. I know what I need I know how I need to light this
right.
correctly in order to match the environment that I'm looking for. Or they can actually just frame because now you can visualize close what is going to be the end result. So now the DPs and the camera operators can actually do the angle that they didn't thought that it was going to work at the end. So right. now they can go crazy. Okay, now I can go this low angle with this lens. I can go, you know, long lens and everything because you can actually preview right there. Okay, I can, if I do this angle, I can still see the creature behind the actor and I can still get a nice over the shoulder shot or something like that. So
right.
now instantly you can actually decide, make a decision, and the director says, yes, this is what I want.
Okay.
Let's shoot it. And what we're trying to do is being able to get in final camera, final shots in camera
okay.
with this LED technology.
Right. So that's, yes. So that basically, those types of decisions used to be done during a process called previs.
Yes.
right? So previs was basically the idea of creating, let's say, not necessarily final quality, but super fast iteration versions that you could go through, but it was still somewhat offline, right?
Exactly.
And so he's like, okay, I'll see this shot now, change it. And then you have to wait a few hours or whatever, and you get the next version and you get the next version and you kind of go through it. It was a very tedious process and hard process, right?
Yeah.
But it still limited your decision-making because of that process. So do you think virtual production is going to affect the way we think about previs?
Oh, yeah. We use a lot of the movies right now are doing virtual doing previs with virtual production tools. So I know, you know, there is some projects right now, some movies that they don't want to do storyboards.
Right.
They just want to do virtual production
right previs, from the beginning. Right.
Because you give the director and the DPs, you know, an iPad or a prop that kind of looks like a camera that can hold and it's being tracked either with a Vive.
Right.
With a Vive, or it can be tracked with optical tracking or Moses, whatever. Any kind of system. And then they suddenly are able to play with a previous scene because it's still the quality spirit, you know, something that is quick and dirty.
It's scene. Blocking.
It's blocking. Yeah. Right. It's gray boxing, so to speak. But now they can physically shoot it.
Right.
You know, virtually. Mm-hmm. So now they go straight to, okay, let's do something like, and they're calling this a story viz. They're visualizing.
Story viz, interesting, yeah.
Story viz is just, they go with the script, mm-hmm. and they have the script and say, okay, I see the script. Let's play around with something. Let's play around with some cameras. Let's do some quick previs. But now the same previs is using the virtual production tools to allow them just to kind of like physical shoot it virtually.
Do you think that basically this really started when you're tracking the camera? When you're tracking the camera, that's the big change, right?
Yes. Yeah, because the big change is just to give, because moving a camera with a mouse is not fun.
No. No, it's not.
So I think, you know, once you give a cinematographer a physical object that they can operate as a camera.
Right.
Then suddenly they're like, okay, it's easy. I'm not intimidated by technology. I'm not intimidated by computer. I can just do my cinematography with something that looks like a camera.
Mm-hmm.
So that really opens the door to enable this technology to the filmmakers.
Right. Yeah. It was very interesting because I remember Kevin Margot, when he was working on Construct, and he had a trackable camera that he was using, but they actually motion captured the whole fight sequence, and really good stunt guys who did it, and it was great, but they just did it without a camera, and they just did it, and then basically they took all of the fight, and instead of them doing it over and over and over again and filming it, they just had it all the performance captured, and then he went in on a weekend. Set up a cheapy, you know, motion capture stage in a conference room at Blur and just took the camera and just made like 30 different cameras of the same thing. And then he like took all those takes and cut it into a fight sequence after the fact. And so it's just kind of interesting to think about all those things that this technology enables you to do. Like, all right, yes, I don't have to sit here and have the entire crew perform over and over and over again, I can still save that performance and go and see what I can get out of it on my own. So tracking a camera is actually interesting because it's simple. You're only tracking one point in space and a direction, right?
Yeah, as long as you don't have to encode the lens, it's really simple. Translation, one single point, translation, rotation.
Right. And you could transcode the lens. It's not that hard to do.
Yeah.
You just need a little transcoder or something.
Correct.
But it's fun. I mean, I think I remember even Kevin, that he was playing around with, they created some kind of a box that they got out of parts from Fry's with a little encoder and a Wi-Fi connector. And they connected it back to the computer and they basically created a remote focus puller.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And when you do that little manual thing, it feels more natural, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one thing that is also cool is you know, you give them the cinematographers the virtual camera, mm-hmm. but then now you can also edit inside Unreal Engine. So then it's even faster because
right.
you go in, you shoot, a couple of things, and then you update on the fly your edit inside Unreal Engine. It has an editing system. So then you can quickly say, okay, let's try this. And I say, no, this doesn't work. I just need another shot.
Right.
So let's do a pickup shot. And then you go in and then let's shoot this action from another angle. And because you have the motion capture data in the system, you just basically replay the same action,
right.
but then you shoot it with another camera angle. You record it.
Yeah.
Then you update the edit and you say, okay, this is going to work.
Right.
So the whole cycle is so tight now. It's so small. You know, you have, you know, the guys performing with an XN suit right there in front of the director. Right. You have the camera. Then you have the edit. So in the it compresses the length that it takes to explore a shot.
Yeah. What about the post-process? Like, what do you think it's going to happen there? Obviously, we know that, you know, the rendering is going to get faster and faster and faster. The quality is going to get better as we go. New technology, new GPUs, real-time rendering is getting better and better. But I also think that, you know, there's going to be less ambiguity after it comes out of motion capture now, because the decision is being seen live way closer to the final than it used to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think that's going to happen in the post-process? You think that basically virtual production is going to slowly become just production and, remove some of the need of post-production?
No, I think there is always going to be a need of post-production, because it is... In post-production, you apply your art, so to speak.
Okay.
Right? It's just the final touches.
Right.
You know, what technology is doing right now with more advanced facial capture performance, with more advanced body capture performance, you're getting more clean data.
Okay.
Right? So the data that you get from your shoot, motion capture shoot, is usable. You can use it. You have to less.
You think it's gotten better? Because it used to, I mean, there used to be a lot of motion capture cleanup that we had to do before.
It has gotten a little better.
Okay.
It hasn't made as huge leaps as other technology.
Okay.
But I do see that the future, it's going to get, you know, with all the machine learning and everything that's happening right now, it's going to get much more usable raw data.
Okay.
And we have seen some of that with some of our friends.
Mm-hmm.
And what is going to happen is, like, you get out of your shoot a lot of good data that then later on post-production is just going to apply the artistic touches.
Right.
You know, make it look beautiful, you know, do a lot of, like, you know, beauty lighting. Mm-hmm. Now let's go augmented. Now let's do, you know, better simulation on the cloth, or better simulation. You know, I do believe that it's still going to be a lot of post-production, but the tools are going to be faster anyway.
Okay.
You know, there's going to be probably, you know, it's going to be some really good, you know, we currently right now with Unreal Engine, we just released a new hair system.
Okay.
Which is really, really good real time.
Right.
So you can actually have, you know, you can now the director can direct the actor motion, previewing how much the hair is going to move based on the motion of the actor.
Interesting, yeah.
So now you can actually start visualizing closer and closer the end product, so that the decision making, the art direction, every decision that needs to happen on the day of the shoot can be executed as it's meant to be.
Right.
Because then Unreal Engine allows them to visualize the end product closer. So now, before, as you know, they might have a performance of an actor running too fast, and this actor might be actually a creature that has fur system, and then you realize that it was doing a lot of big movements, and because of these big movements and the hair or the fur that was using is that performance worked. Was not going to work, so they had to go and shoot it again.
Yeah.
So this, once again, it's allowing
you get it closer to what it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you'll see if it doesn't work right then and there, it's supposed to down the line.
Yeah.
Yeah. But let's actually talk a little bit about that's being on set, because I think you guys also do something that's pretty interesting. When you're doing a virtual production, now you have a lot more people that have different responsibilities that are on set. Before, it was just motion capture performers and the person that's capturing the motion, and then a director basically sort of directing the action. But now you can have someone that's lighting, someone that's doing, live compositing, possibly someone that's doing different directing animation or replaying different roles. So there's a lot more people that can be working inside the virtual world. How do you get all those people to work all at the same time in the same world? So you guys have a tool for that, right?
Yes. In Unreal Engine, we have something that's called multi-user editing.
Right.
And this allows us to everybody to work in the same scene. So you have...
It's not unlike all working in a game together, right?
It is kind of like all working in a game together.
Right.
Yeah. It's
multi-user games, right?
Yeah, multi-user. It's the same technology. You know, you're
in Fortnite.
Yeah, you're in Fortnite and you create your own city. And yeah. So this, you basically, you know, multi-user editing allows you just to have a scene in a server, and every instance or every computer that has Unreal Engine can actually just
connect
to that scene. And right. then you say, you know, and then you define roles. You say, okay, right. Chris, you're going to do lighting.
Right.
You know, John is going to do layout. Mm-hmm. You know, so-and-so is going to be capturing the animation. So-and-so right. is doing the live action compositing.
Right.
So everybody's working at the same time. And then you can see, you know, you can see avatars of everybody on the scene moving things around.
Right.
So this is now bringing again the VFX team into set. So now we have,
right.
you know, you're going to be seeing on set, you know, an area that they call the brain bar.
Right.
And the brain bar is basically a whole bunch of CG artists connected all in, you know, with Unreal Engine into the scene. So you have the LED wall that is being operated by 3 or 4 or 5 machines.
Right.
And then you have VR scouting that can be also in the same scene. And then the director or the anybody can actually just start seeing how the scene looks in VR, and then say, okay, you know what? Next time we shoot it from this angle because it looks cool. So everybody's working at the same time in the same scene. So that right. actually speed up the decision-making process
yeah.
quite a lot.
Yeah, I know. I love that idea. I think it's really great. I think that people should look at that and say, hey, you know, who in the visual effects never wanted, like we've always wanted to be on set and see the decision-making. Now there's that opportunity for us to do what we do live on set and in a virtual set. So it's kind of cool.
And I can tell you like a little story. I was working on a in-camera VFX project mm-hmm. with the mill for a Louis Vuitton project.
Mm-hmm.
And then the director, because they are so used to traditional VFX and things like that shooting, that I was operating the machine, and then I heard him saying, oh man, I wish we could slow down the rain. And I turned around, I was like, do you want me to slow down the rain? And he's like, can you do that? I'm like, yeah. So I slowed down the rain. He's like, oh, amazing. And what else you can do? I'm like, what do you want me to do?
Right.
Because everything is live.
Right.
And whatever I'm doing in Unreal Engine, it is display on the LED wall.
Right.
So then suddenly they suddenly like, oh my God, you know, I can make changes right now when I'm shooting.
I don't have to wait till later.
They don't have to wait. They can make the decision. They suddenly see, you know what? The original speed that we decided to pick 2 days ago,
mm-hmm.
now that when we see it in camera, it's too fast.
Right.
Or the length of the rain is too long.
Too long, right.
But now because you're seeing, you know, you're seeing the actor, you're seeing everything happening, you're like, oh my God, I just wish I made those changes. So now this allows them to do this.
Right.
Instead of like having to wait and re-render
mm-hmm.
and all that stuff. And things that are also cool is like we were working in a scene.
Mm-hmm.
While the other guys, the other artists, Unreal Engine artists, they were working in the scene that they were going to shoot next.
Right.
They were still making changes on that. And the minute we were done shooting this mm-hmm. scene, we just uploaded the new scene into the LED wall. And then, so shrinking the time again, you know.
Yeah, it's so, like striking the set and bringing it back. That's a lot of time you just saved, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting.
And virtual production also allows you to see things that you never saw before, like plan for things. For example, like when we were doing like another production with Simulcam, mm-hmm. you know, a virtual camera and a little actor on acting in front of the actor.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, you know, the guy off screen who was driving the CG character.
Mm-hmm.
was acting with a real actor. And then suddenly, because they were in the same room, they were kind of feeding each other reactions, suddenly the director started discovering new scenes. They start discovering new things that they could do that he didn't imagine before.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, virtual production allows everybody to see things in real time and come up with new ideas or correct the original plan.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I think people don't realize that that power of reacting to what you're seeing and making the correction on the fly. It is going to change a lot of the way we make filmmaking, I think. And I think it's going to make things more interesting and creative because you have more room to experiment with things that before you just in, you know, it reminded me like, I just keep talking about like long time ago, I was working on a show where we were still using RenderMan and old RenderMan and shadow maps, right? And in order to move a light, I had to re-render all the shadow maps to the point where I was like, I'm not going to move the light, even though it probably would have been the better decision just because it was such a pain to move the light. So, but what if you could just do it real time? It's like that perfect. And now you don't have to do that decision. Just the idea that, you know, the decision I make is going to take weeks to implement, so I'm not going to make that decision. It's just not very good for the creativity or the look of things. So the more you can do it live and in real time, the better it is for everyone, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think is, you know, obviously I think this is true. This is where a lot of things are going in a lot of ways. And I think you guys are already sort of at the forefront of that. Why is Epic getting involved in this? What's the motivation with Epic to get involved in all these non-game things that are going on?
Yeah. So the thing is that, Unreal Engine right now is basically using all industries.
Sure.
And it's because it is a platform. Mm-hmm. It is a piece of software that allows you just to create content in one platform and mm-hmm. distribute in multiple deliverables.
Yep.
So that's what is really, really, really attracted to a lot of industries. You know, mm-hmm. you can, and the quality, the image, the rendering quality is really high. So now you can actually create for example, a car configurator
mm-hmm.
that looks really, really damn good. And then that car configurator can be run on the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so people can, you know, like these companies, they can actually update the models at any time, and they don't have to re-render these images,
right.
or reprint these catalogs. And,
right.
You know, so now you create a project that can actually serve multiple purpose.
Right.
And so there is also a lot of making a real engine available to other industries helps the product become better.
Okay.
Because now you have, you know, now you have the media and entertainment world or mm-hmm. film and TV world mm-hmm. that they like to push the envelope.
Sure.
You know, they want to, you know, like give me crazy amount of geometry, give me ray tracing, real-time ray tracing. So mm-hmm. this industry is demanding for this.
Mm-hmm.
And all this, you know, we develop these tools and we enable all this technology into Unreal Engine that will actually feed the rest of the ecosystem. It's going to end up making better video games. Mm-hmm. It's going to end up making better car configurator.
Mm-hmm.
So by Epic paying attention to what other industries
mm-hmm.
need, eventually it's becoming a better product.
Right. Okay. So that's really one of the things. It's like this is about testing your engine in different environments. It's more kind of the motivation here, right?
Yes. And if you pay attention to what's happening with Unreal Engine and Fortnite,
mm-hmm.
you start seeing some changes in the way people consume entertainment.
Uh-huh.
For example, if you see in Fortnite, you have a Marshmello concert.
Yeah.
So now people are participating in a concert virtually on a video game.
Right.
This is the biggest concert in history.
In terms of people attending.
In terms of people attending.
Right.
Virtually. And then you see, you know, Star Wars doing a release, a teaser inside Fortnite.
Right, yes.
So Tim Sweeney, the CEO of mm-hmm. Epic Games, he believes in this concept called the metaverse.
Mm-hmm.
And you can start seeing this happening right now.
Right.
With Unreal Engine Epic Games.
So that's interesting. So the metaverse is really just an entire virtual world that you do more than play video games in. You mm-hmm. can do a lot of other community activities in there, yeah. right? And that's not necessarily a completely new concept, right? So, I mean, you can almost, it's like Second Life. That's a bad, not necessarily a great example, but that wasn't the idea. It's like, you can do everything here. You can buy houses, you can communicate with people, et cetera, et cetera. But now you're like, no, big community events are happening, big announcements are being done or whatever. And so that world becomes a different world. So all the lessons that you're learning from virtual production, is that starting to, that's starting to enter into that server, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and the techniques of that you develop in virtual production eventually are helping create this content that is going to be on you know, Fortnite or
anything. Right.
I mean, we use a lot of the game cinematics for Fortnite are done with virtual productions.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We have a whole bunch of, we have some videos out there just showing how we have three characters or five characters at once doing body capture, facial capture, and we do virtual cameras in order to quickly iterate and make different decisions and explore. Mm-hmm. So you can see these technologies being developed by the Epic Games, used on our own content and our own products, and then we battle test it. And once we know it's working, then that's when we release it to the public.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think the what's interesting is like, you know, that the virtual world could be a new environment that people interact with. It was on a podcast, a technology podcast. I think it was the Vergecast, but they were basically talking about how the competitor to Netflix is not like Hulu or HBO. The competitor to Netflix is actually Fortnite.
I know.
Because basically the idea is it's what you're doing on your screen that's important, not like a competitive service. And if you're in Fortnite, you're not watching Netflix, right?
Yeah.
So, but if you could go into Fortnite and Fortnite also becomes a platform where you watch equivalent to Netflix, then that's it, right? That becomes your entire universe, right? So so that's interesting, and it goes back to your VR in a little bit, really, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Do you think VR is going to have a role to play in virtual production? Because I know that the Magnopus guys were using VR as part of that idea as well. So what's your thoughts about that?
Yeah, we have been seeing some good results with cinematographers using VR, because suddenly they are immersed in this world, and then suddenly virtually they are like, okay, let me see how this looks if I use a 70mm lens. Mm-hmm. Okay, let me change the lens. Let's do a 24.
But they can look around the set.
And suddenly they look through the viewfinder, they look at the shot, and then suddenly, you know what? Maybe I just go to that corner.
Right.
And they easily
they
fly there, and then so allows them to quickly, once again, allow them to make faster decisions, explore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then there is a project out there, Netflix movies called I Am Mother.
Okay.
And they did, this company, Australia company, Pixel Studios, I think is the name. Mm-hmm. They did this VR storyboarding.
Oh, okay.
And it was really interesting because they say, you know, I just go in and then I have a set, virtual set, and they plan with VR, and then they take stills, and then they do a storyboard virtually with VR. Right. So I've seen a lot of acceptance of VR for the filmmaking guys.
Yeah. I think it's practical. I mean, the whole point of VR is to take you to a place that you haven't been before, right? And I think if it's something that you're working on, you're doing something in the VR sense, then I think it makes sense to do that.
Yeah, and it's also the notion of like it's a little more physical, because you are in the world and you say, okay, I want to lift this rock. And you virtually lift in the rock. You pick it with your controller and you move it, and they say, okay, I'm going to move this couch, and then you move it. So then it becomes more physical.
Right.
And then that's what we as humans have learned to do things physical, move around, let's climb the wall, let's go. So then it becomes your whole body is engaged. So when your body the more you are involved, you know, the more your body and your mind is involved, you end up having a better experience.
Yeah.
So it's a more intimate experience rather than you in front of a screen with a mouse and a keyboard.
Right.
You feel limited in a way, handicapped.
Mm-hmm.
But when you put them in the world, you let them go to every single area that they can possibly explore and then look through a lens,
yep.
then suddenly they are immersed into the experience. So it becomes,
experience.
Yeah. It becomes a much better.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what that's happening. What is your thoughts about directors and how they are experiencing this? Are they having a hard time with it, or is it just like, it's just, you know, what's going on there?
I see a big change in a way. Before, technology, you know, computer, you know, CGI, mm-hmm. it was, you know, only people with you know, scientific majors, everything right. can touch it. Now technology, and for example, Unreal Engine is mm-hmm. is making these tools much simpler.
Okay.
So now the technology is more friendly to them.
Sure.
So it's highly acceptable.
Right.
So now you have, you know, Jon Favreau and all this. I mean, obviously those are directors that are really technical.
Sure.
But then we are inviting a lot of new directors just to show them technology and tell them, look, it's so easy. Just press this button and press this other button, touch right. this interface. And everybody's so familiar now with electronic devices, with iPhones and iPads,
right.
that it's really easy for them. So we make these interfaces to make it as easy as possible for them to interact.
Interesting.
So now the barrier is much low.
But you guys can experiment with all kinds of stuff because it's completely new, right? So you can yes. make new interfaces all the time. And there's no real standard, right? It's not like I've learned on this interface. And it's like, well, we'll give whatever interface you want, right?
Yes. And a lot of the tools that you find in Unreal Engine, they are developed via Blueprint, which is a visual programming mm-hmm. that allows anybody to fully customize it.
Right.
So you can actually see people just creating a slightly different UIs and different interface that actually works really well for so-and-so director.
Okay.
You know, you can say, okay, there is a DP that likes to use a specific lens kit.
Right.
And then so you just build that lens kit in your UI. So you only have to pick the lenses that person likes.
Right.
So yeah, it's fully customizable and helps them be less afraid of the technology.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's interesting. I think also, you know, we Chaos Group, we've obviously been very interested in real time, understanding where it rolls. And it's a challenge because, you know, we're very faithful to ray tracing, right? That ray tracing is in our blood and what we're doing. So we are very interested in understanding, how we can bring ray tracing to real time and where that happens. So we were very interested in, you know, working with Unreal. So that's why we created V-Ray for Unreal, because we feel that there's still a big power of ray tracing that's going on. I think lighting and ray tracing are very different. We're trying to stay very faithful to full ray tracing, meaning not rasterization with ray tracing on top of it. So it'd be very interesting to see where that happens, because what's interesting to me about Unreal is, like, yeah, I'm very interested obviously in the quality of the rendering, and I think a lot of people are, but I still think that fully ray traced is going to be eventually what everyone wants going to want to do. What I think is interesting about Unreal is the workflow that you guys are doing. The workflow is like the creating the interface. Like, you want me to slow down the rain? I can slow down the rain. You know, all those interactive things that are so important for that real-time experience. Real-time is not just about the rendering. It's about creating an environment where everyone is working together. It's really cool, really cool. So I'm fascinated by where that's going to go and how that quality is going to start to become better and better as you go. So really interesting what's going on there.
Yeah, enabling ray tracing in Unreal Engine with the new RTX technology.
Yeah.
It opens more opportunities.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
So yeah, it is not a full through ray tracing mm-hmm. because it's more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we have to keep in mind, it's just like, you know, we want to do 30 frames per second or so we have to go around and do some tricks.
But this, see, here's the thing, right? You guys are very, you guys have a very powerful and very good quality rasterized render, right? So you guys can capitalize on that knowledge and on that, etc. We don't know much about rasterization, but we know a whole lot about ray tracing. So that's our thing. So that's, you know, when we did Lavina, that was like, we're just going to go full on ray trace in real time. And we're able to get, you know, about 30 frames a second fully ray traced, which is tough. There's still a lot of challenges that we don't know about, right? So we can't, but you guys do, like in the Unreal world. So it's very interesting to think about like how that relationship works, because I think that that once we start getting fully ray traced stuff happening in real time, then you're really going to slow, like that window is going to become smaller and smaller, where you're basically, yep, that's the shot, you're done, you know? And that, I don't think that's going to be that far from now, that we see what you saw is going to be pretty close to exactly what's going to be on the screen.
Yeah.
Really in real time.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really, really cool what you guys are doing. I think it's, the virtual production is, a key part of where we're going to go in terms of the filmmaking. And I think Unreal is really doing a really good job of that. Now, here's another challenge. People may need to learn how to use Unreal, but you guys are helping that process too, right?
Yes, we help a lot. We you know, in our LA office, we offer classes every day.
Wow, yeah.
But yeah, we understand that it's a new tool, you know, there is things that you have to do slightly different, you know, you have to optimize your assets, you have to make sure that you create your assets in a slightly different way, just to make it more optimized for them. So we understand that there is some learning to happen, and that's why, you know, Epic is investing in that. You know, we have classes in LA, we have classes in Montreal, we have classes in Guildford office.
Okay.
We have great classes online,
okay,
all free. You know, like classes online, like hundreds and hundreds of hours of from beginning classes, how to open Unreal Engine to advanced.
Okay.
So yeah, we definitely need to help the community learn.
Okay.
And we're definitely here to help for that.
Okay. Well, that's great.
Yeah, we have some amazing classes in the LA office. We have, you know, Intro to Virtual Production, actually.
Oh, really?
Where you have an Xen suit, and then you have a VCam, and then we teach you how to do virtual production. And
nice.
We have blueprints, intro to blueprints, intro to lighting, to materials. We basically have the entire set of classes for you just to learn and get up to speed.
That's great. That's great. Well, cool. Well, thank you so much, Juan. I really appreciate you coming by and sort of telling us about this, because I think it's going to be really great for people to do that and to learn some of this new cool stuff. All right.
Thanks, man. Thank you so much. It's fun to be here with you.